walk in darkness, have seen a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine on them. For every boot that tramped in battle, every cloak rolled in blood will be burned, will be fuel for flames. Flanking the darkness, the judgment, even the unbelief, Isaiah ignites our hope. And we are on tiptoe. Hope for the reign of justice. Hope in the morass of darkness. How? Why? I think it helps that Isaiah's words are all in the past tense, as if these events had already happened. God showed him this vision, so it's certain, even though it has not yet been worked out in history. Some 7 centuries later, Jesus stood in the temple and declared, "I am the light of the world. They who follow me will not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." 200 centuries later still, one of us to whom the light of the world has come, the child Isaiah promised, waited for, came in some same way. But our world is neither peaceful nor just. Justice is neither visible nor palpable. We muck about. Isaiah describes us well, an anguished people living in a land of darkness drenched in blood. If that description seems overstated, I suggest a perusal of the daily news, and it doesn't act like day. As we gather tonight, 12 U.S. aircraft carriers haunt the seas. Each carries more than 100 aircraft, plus missiles, guns, 3,000 or so sailors. Each sails with a flotilla of destroyers, missile launchers, cruisers, submarines, and so forth, projecting U.S. power to all corners of the earth. Boats tramping in battle. As we gather tonight, the U.S. has thousands of nuclear weapons, 500 plus intercontinental ballistic missiles, with a total of 1,700 nuclear warheads, 432 submarine launched ballistic missiles, with over 3,000 nuclear warheads, 243 bombers with over 1,000 nuclear warheads. And how many clothes, uniforms, outfits, from jeans to formal attire, all rolled in blood. As we gather tonight, our nation devastates Iraq and Afghanistan and holds people in prison under torture for life, all in our name. Prisoners are called terrorists by those with no moral ground to lecture anyone about terror or weapons, about right or justice. And I must say that these victims of torture do have a few who dare to speak for them and who have spoken in consistent and creative praise for over 3.5 years and have witnessed daily these 100 days in front of the White House and all around this city. And tomorrow, they will conclude their 100 days witness with direct action and nonviolent resistance. And I encourage all who come to be with them tomorrow to do so. But as we gather tonight, we know that the United States is not the reign of God. The reality of our nation is violence, exploitation, and terror. Wherever we live, we know that the United States has degenerated into nation fascism at home and imperialist empire abroad. The powerful are drenched in profits, the people are drenched in blood. So how does the promised disarmament come to be? Is it the work of a mighty conqueror, the work of a military armed to the teeth? No. Isaiah is clear. All the implements of war destroy, every boot, every cloak burned as fuel for the flames. Then, and only then, can our hope be realized. These verses tonight repeat in spirit Isaiah's prophecy about weaving swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks. In both passages, it's the people who make the difference. It's people of conscience, people like us. It's people who beat swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks. Consequence is that nations don't pray for war anymore. And in the passage we reflect on tonight, the flame consumes the weapons and the intrigues of war. And I submit to you that that consuming flame is nothing more or less than our passion and commitment. Strong enough, deep enough, loving enough to enliven and inflame a movement to end war, weapons, their domination of people in history. I close my eyes to visualize the peace, the wholeness this passage speaks of, but I see instruments of war amassed all over this world. Billions spent on weapons, $32,000 every second of every day. Sisters and brothers, our whole way of life is at odds with these scriptures and how that hurts. So, I need to remind myself that Jesus didn't hold out any prospect of immediate peace. He sends us, his disciples, among wolves. He warns that families will be divided, that people will hate us and drag us before the law of the land. This Jesus achieved peace by refusing the option for violence, even in the face of a dreaded death. His spirit will bring peace through nonviolence all over this earth. If and when people like us allow ourselves to be animated by that spirit of Christ's peace. We await the fulfillment of this biblical vision of peace in our world, but we can't just wait for it. We've got to be part of bringing it into being. We confront those in power concerning their wars and rampages against earth and life, their plans to reduce this magnificent creation to ash. We have to confront them. Our hearts and minds are deserts unless we live in harmony, unless we resist depth of suffering and monstrous evil that constitutes so much of our world today. So how can we stretch ourselves to speak out, to be more prophetic and less self-absorbed, to be more compassionate and less fearful, more loving and less concerned about personal consequences, and above all, to become men and women who are passionate enough to ignite a flame to end Earth's domination by a devastating war machine, or to make way for justice and peace here and now. And can we say amen to this? Knowing that the colloquial translation of amen is, we bet our lives on it.